Shisuka Uvacha.
Shisukadev Goswami said,
Govardhane,
Govardhan,
Jute,
having been held,
Shaile,
the hill,
Asara,
from the rainfall,
Rakshite,
having been protected,
Vraje,
Vraja,
Golokad,
from the planet of the cows,
Avrajat,
came,
Krishnam,
to Krishna,
Surabhi,
Mother Surabhi,
Sakra,
Indra,
Eva,
also,
Cha,
and.
Translation.
Sukadev Goswami said, after Krishna had lifted Govardhan Hill and thus protected the inhabitants of Braj from the terrible rainfall, Surabhi, the mother of the cows, came from her planet to see Krishna. She was accompanied by Indra. Please repeat. Sukadev Goswami said, after Krishna had lifted Govardhan Hill and thus protected the inhabitants of Braj from the terrible rainfall, Surabhi, the mother of the cows,
came from her planet to see
Krishna. She was accompanied by Indra. Purport. The word Golokat here indicates the material planet called Goloka, which is filled with exceptional cows. So this Goloka, where Surabhi came from, wasn't the spiritual Goloka, but there's a place in the material world called Goloka because there are so many cows. Loka of Go, Goloka. Surabhi went joyfully to see Krishna, but Indra went fearfully. As indicated by this verse, Lord Krishna had to adopt extraordinary measures to protect his Vrindavan associates from Indra's obnoxious and offensive attack. Certainly, Indra was ashamed and also nervous about his future. Having acted improperly, he had fearfully gone to seek the shelter of Lord Brahma, who had then ordered him to take along Surabhi from the material Goloka planet and go to see Krishna. Oma gina timandasya gina gina salakaya chakshu unmilitam jena tasmai shri guruve namaha. So there's a place in Vrindavan, perhaps some of you have seen, it is called Govindakund. It's a large body of water, and in the morning and during the day, the residents of Govardhan, who live in that surrounding area, they come and they bring all of their washing. The ladies come with bundles of washing and a stick. That's not to frighten anyone, but that's to beat the clothes. They beat the clothes to get all the dust out of them. This is an age-old process. They place the clothes in the water, wash them up and down, and they beat the clothes and beat the clothes, right? Yes. And then they take the clothes and then they put them back into their basket and they put them on their head and they go home. And the children come and they play in the water, and there's lots of green algae in the water just to make it especially inviting. And out through the green algae you see these snake-like looking forms, and they're the heads of the turtles that live in that water. Sometimes they come and they sit on the steps and they spread out their legs and their head to dry off and to get some change, and then they go again quietly back under the water. So this Govindakund is the place where, after Indra had had his little talk with Krishna, in which he was quite worried actually, because as we were here, he was quite frightened that because he had made such an extraordinary error of judgment, that he may possibly lose his post You can imagine, just like if you were working in some company, right, and you decided that you wanted to see if the general manager had a bad temper, and you put a frog in his desk or something, you know, and there's a terrible situation occurs. Well, that was what Lord Brahma did. Indra did something quite different. It's like as if you hired someone to kill him. If you hired somebody to kill the head of your business, you might be worried about your position when they find out. You know, he easily escapes your plan, but he notices your motive, and he's now seen your heart. So Indra's heart had been exposed to everyone when he decided in his passion that he would show them something, because they were all prepared to worship him. Nanda Baba knew this. This was the ritual and the custom. He was, in fact, in the same village, because if you read in the Bhagavatam, the pastime just before this is when Krishna, the pastime before this pastime, one back, is took place in the winter when Krishna satisfied the young girls of Braja who wanted to marry him. And so they went and they made their offerings every morning for 1 month. It's called the Katyayani Vrat. And they prayed to Goddess Katyayani, please, we want to marry Krishna. So Krishna came one special morning, the last day of their Vrat, when all the other gopis, all the girls were there, not only the ones who were making the vows and praying, but all their friends came as well. And he mysteriously came unnoticed by them, and he scooped up all of their clothes very quickly and cleverly and climbed up into a kadamba tree and hung them very delicately from the branches of the tree. And of course, Srila Prabhupada explains, still to this day, in places like Punjab, there are places where the girls go and no man ever goes there because they have some culture. And so the women go to that place and they place their clothes on the bank and they bathe naked and then they come out and they get dressed. So that's what they were doing. And when they looked around, they were about to get up from the water and take their clothes, they saw they were all missing. And then they became a little worried. And then just as they were confused, trying to think, where, what's happened here, Krishna very playfully from up in the tree, he began to call out to them in a very, very frivolously joking way and told them that, you know, you can, I have your clothes, they're up here, you might have noticed, so come out one by one and I'll give you back your clothes. And it is said by Kavi Karanpur that the gopis of Vrindavan, the only thing that equaled their love for Krishna was their shyness. They were so shy and chaste. So there was no way they were going to get out of the water. And at the same time, equally strong was their attraction for Krishna. They had prayed, we want to marry him. And now there he is, teasing them in this terribly embarrassing way. So they stayed underwater up to their necks and they tried all kinds of methods. They threatened him. They said, if you keep doing this to us, we'll tell your father. And he just laughed and he said, my father's very weak and I get away, I can do anything I want. You can tell my father if you want. And then they tried a more severe kind of measure and they said, we'll go to Mathura and we'll tell King Kamsa this is not acceptable, you cannot do this. And Krishna laughed at that and gave them some funny retort. And then he went on and on. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the purports, he gives us some imaginary conversations that the gopis may have had. They said one thing, he said another. And when he really wanted to tease them, he said, listen, if you don't come out, it's all right. I'll tie all your clothes together and I'll make a hammock. And I'll just lie up here in the hammock and you can just stay down there in the water. And they were freezing. It was winter. It wasn't summer when the water is pleasing and they were all shivering and turning a little blue. And they finally, they discussed amongst themselves and some of the girls said, you go out first and we'll see what he does and we'll come out later. And in different ways they conjectured how were they going to manage this situation. And finally they came out. Now, if their shyness is equal to their love, they didn't come out in a brazen, common way like women of today, where you can see anywhere you look, you can see a photograph of somebody acting immodestly. They didn't come out like that. They came out incredibly shy and embarrassed. And they were trying with their long, long hair to cover themselves up as much as possible. And Krishna, he continued to tease them. One time, I heard this tape. It was an Englishman. I don't know what his position was. Somebody here may have heard it. And he was discussing in England with Srila Prabhupada about Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada usually didn't go to these pastimes because this particular pastime is not called a naimittic pastime. A naimittic pastime is a pastime which is to teach us something. So just for example, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells us that each of the demons that Krishna killed, even this chastisement of Indra, is to remove from the heart of the practicing devotee something unwanted for their advancement. So when they read that pastime and they meditate in this way, that Krishna is removing this by killing this demon, it has a purifying effect. But this pastime, where Krishna steals the gopis' clothes, is not like that. It's an eternal sacred pastime. It's a confidential pastime, where Krishna is doing something that no one should try to learn from. No one should imitate this behavior. So generally the acharyas, they keep these pastimes over to the side, and Srila Prabhupada also, and they speak about other pastimes which are more revealing and instructive to us. So in this conversation, Srila Prabhupada goes to this pastime. I think perhaps the man had read the Krishna book, and he asked about this. And he asked about the idea that Prabhupada had written in the Krishna book, that he treated the gopis just like dolls. Just like dolls means, if you see, here's a young child, if they have a lot of dolls, they put one doll there, they put one doll there, they put, and for the little boys, they put their soldiers there, they put something over here, then they don't like that, they move it over there. They're completely free to move the dolls anywhere, and if they don't like, I remember when my son was small, he would play for a while and then he would just go swipe and all the toys would knock over and that was the end of the game. So in that way, the child is very arbitrary what they do, and the dolls are completely under their control. The dolls have no volition to react. They're just moved around anyway. But we wouldn't like to feel that Krishna's doing that with us. He's just doing whatever he feels like with us. Unfortunately, we wouldn't like that. And this is actually our great misfortune. We think, oh, that would be the most horrible thing. Imagine if he just did anything he wanted with me. He could just, like, you know, throw me away, he could do this, he could tear me up, he could just put me in the garbage. That would be horrible. So the living entity has come into this world with a very strong sense of independence. They may submit themselves to someone. In some cultures, women particularly are submissive. And they submit, but all the time, the person they're submitting to becomes part of their independence. And then their children become part of their world. It's not that they give everything, heart and soul, totally surrender, generally speaking, to the pleasure of the Lord. And if someone does do that, then they're considered exalted. They're not normal. They're not general. The general mood is, I take care of myself. And if I have a problem, I pray to God. And if I see someone else with a problem, I pray to him, please fix that. That's not quite right. In case you didn't notice, there's something over here. I'm just bringing it to your attention. And they feel good. I've fixed that up. I've done. And they, because they have a sense of I am in the center. I'm observing things and I'm seeing how they should be. They should be like this, they should be like this. And they don't have a sense of being out of the center. And Krishna's in the center. But when we see in Bhagavad Gita Arjuna's actions, his frailties, he acts like us. At the end of the first chapter, he says things like, how can I take part in this activity? It will kill all my family. And if my family die, then who will I enjoy with? Practically speaking, what's the use of the kingdom? How will I share it if my family are not here? And he also thinks in a worried way, and he says that if I kill these men, then there'll be sin committed. That means I'll get a reaction for that. Some punishment will come to me. And not only that, society will suffer so much. His thoughts are not unknowable, but his thoughts are human. They're like a human being. But Arjuna wasn't like that. So why is Arjuna speaking in this way? Of course we can say he was speaking in this way for the benefit of all of humanity, and that's correct. But he's not thinking like that. I'm speaking in this way for the benefit of all humanity. He's just being used as a puppet by Krishna, because his senses and Krishna's senses are interchangeable. If Krishna pushes him, he moves this way, that way. Just like for a healthy person, their hand, it doesn't do anything that you don't want it to do. And you may be listening and you have an itch somewhere, and even while you're listening, your hand will go and scratch that itch. And something sticking in your foot, it will take it out, and you'll continue to listen. And if there's something really painful, your hand will let you, ooh, that's very sore. Then our attention goes and has a look and so forth. Our hand is so intimately connected to the whole body that it's constantly moving for the pleasure of the whole body. You think sometimes, you watch through a day, sometime in the day, you stop and observe yourself and see what your limbs of your body are doing. They're working in your favor, and if they don't do that, that means there's something wrong with you. And before I came here, I was driving in a car, and there was someone waiting at a traffic light, and he kept going like this. So it struck my attention, he was going like this, and so I thought at first maybe he's got a little something he's trying to get off his shoulder, but then after a few moments he started also going like this, and he was trying to cross the road, and it stood out, because he had some paralysis, so his body wasn't doing what he wanted it to do, it was doing something different, and it looks odd. We may look sympathetically, but it definitely, we notice this is not what normally happens. But this is what we're like. We're doing this and doing this, and we're doing what we want. Krishna is trying to bring us to the point of sanity, practically speaking. He's trying to bring us to the point of sanity. Srila Prabhupada is working on this, and it will take some time. But here, Indra, he's in a very high executive position. He's up somewhere at the top. And so he shouldn't be acting like this. He shouldn't lose his temper and be so upset when he didn't get the proper due things that's supposed to come to him. It's as if, you know, if you think of it in a corporate way, you know, he's one of the managers, and the general manager does something really insulting, you know, takes away a lot of his influence and power and gives it to some insignificant newcomer who just fills up the cups with water or something. Some kid over here says, you know, why should he have all that power and influence? Why don't you listen to me? I know much better than him. You know, let me, you know, and then do it my way. I think you should do this. Forget about him. Don't offer him any more of his salary for this and so on and so forth. Do this. Have this little play. Play a little bit. So this is how Indra saw it. And he thought, all right, that's what you think. You think that I am just a sort of an insignificant part of everything? He thought, all right, I'll show you. I will show you what I can do. I will show you my power. This boy is talkative, and he's changed all of your minds. You're foolish, and you've offended me. So I will show you. Now here in the beginning of the Govardhan Leela, we read through Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comments. He describes at the very beginning of this pastime that Krishna has done this. He particularly did this because he wanted to remove some great pride that had come in the heart of Indra. Pride, it is said, goes before So Indra had become very proud of his position. I'm in such an influential position. The wind and the rain is all under my influence. And the purpose is, what is the great wonders that rainfall provides? It provides our food. It provides our drinking water. It allows us to wash and keep clean. If there's no rainfall, there would be no water. It provides all the water underneath the ground, as well as all the water in the rivers and the lakes. It all comes from the rain. What to speak of all the pleasant activities that we use water for, like swimming and enjoying in this way. What to speak of cooking, So Indra's position is very essential, it's primary. But here Krishna is saying, worship instead a hill and worship some cows and don't bother with him. So it's ironic, isn't it, that he goes to Lord Brahma. So what should I do? I'm sure that Lord Brahma said, well, don't do what I did. Don't go by yourself. Take someone with you who Krishna really likes, you know, and have them talk on your behalf. Because in fact the Acharyas say this, that Lord Brahma said, I went there and I offered my best of prayers and he didn't even look at me. He didn't even acknowledge my presence. Speak to me. I just sort of felt really embarrassed and I fumbled my way out of there and I came back here feeling very, very sorry for what I had done. But if you go, take somebody with you. So he suggested take Surabhi. And Surabhi's a cow. And Indra had just made this tremendous effort to kill all the cows. So how do you think Surabhi felt? She's being asked to go on Indra's behalf. So again, the Acharyas tell us that when Surabhi got there, she said to Krishna, we don't want him as our Indra anymore. He just tried to kill us all. We don't want him as our controller. Indra means the master, Lord. We don't want him. We want you to be Govinda, the master of all the cows. You be our Indra now. You saved us all. He just tried to kill us. And Indra, of course, is standing there very, very ashamed. And Krishna has gone to a secluded place. He has gone somewhere near this Govinda Kund that you can go to even today. And you can even, if you're very brave and faithful, you can take a dip in Govinda Kund and receive unlimited mercy by the sacred waters of that place. And if you're a little less, you're a little more cautious of green algae and turtles and other things, you can take the water and put it on your head and you can get tremendous benefit just by going to these places. Because after you go and you see these places in Vraj, the Leela becomes real. Otherwise, especially if someone hasn't had that opportunity yet, they sound like nice stories and they can be appreciated as stories. But if you go and go and go to these places, they're there. Govardhan Hill is there. Granted, the first time I saw Govardhan Hill, I had read the Krishna book very carefully on my way to Vrindavan, expecting something extraordinary when I got there. And we all got in a bus and drove somewhere, I don't know where, to the edge of Govardhan Hill. And we all got out and there was, to me, it was like a pile of rocks. And not much, not even as high as this temple. It was, and it was practically looked like a fence, a rock wall. And I was so shocked because I had been picturing all of these wonderful scenes and there was something quite different. So then I didn't feel so enthusiastic to go back again because I was perplexed between this duality of what I was seeing and what I had thought I was going to see. So it was some years before again I had the opportunity to go to Vrindavan. And the second time I went was in 1977. I remember we went to Varshana, and at that time there was nothing behind the temple. Now there's a very nice paved parikram path that you go around and the temples are well established and nicely taken care of and the forests are, they're rough, but they bloom in the rainy season beautifully with all kinds of vines and so forth. But then it was just wild out there. Practically speaking, there could even have been wild animals there. It was so wild. And we wandered around and picked up some peacock feathers and I remember it was hot and my legs ached and I wanted to go home. So after about an hour again, I didn't have any further ability to appreciate. But then you go again. Some years later, 1 year later, 2 years later, you go again. And gradually, gradually you assimilate what you're seeing with your eyes and what you've heard. And when you go to the place, you see, yes, I don't see that, but this is the place where that took place. And then further from that, you go to the places and you hear the pastimes there, which is the purpose of going to the Dham, is to hear there. If you don't hear there, what are you doing there? Looking at a pile of rocks? We can't know anything unless we hear it. Just like if somebody came into the temple room a very wonderful person walked in and sat down here, and they were glowingly effulgent and wearing extraordinary clothes. Everyone would turn to somebody and say, "Who's that?" We would immediately want to know. Or someone would say, "Excuse me, sir, who are you?" It would be by hearing we would immediately ask something. Because by looking, we would just guess that must be a really famous man. Oh, look at his this. That probably means this. Our mind may get busy. But we'd learn much quicker if we asked who he was. So similarly, the Dharma is meant for hearing the pastimes. And gradually the mind puts together these two things. This place and this took place. This place and this took place. And then when you think, when you come back to your place in the West, you think of that place, that pastime comes to mind, not just the scenery. Practically speaking, there is an article I one time read by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, or one of his disciples, about Vrajmandal Prikrama. And he said that the disciple is not supposed to look at anything when they're traveling. Of course, they were traveling with an exalted transcendentalist. So this was the instruction given. Don't use your eyes to see anything in the holy Dharma. Use your ears to listen, and use this time to submit. Submit yourself to the one who has eyes, because your eyes are blind. We may think in a kind of annoyed way, "What do you mean my eyes are blind? I see this, I see this." But your spiritual eyes are blind. So he will see everything with spiritual eyes. That means everything he sees, he will link it without any momentary hesitation to Krishna's pastimes. There will be no gap between his seeing and his knowing. This is Krishna's this is Krishna's that. So you listen to him and he will guide you. So similarly, we have entered into the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna's intimate, loving Vrindavan pastimes, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada. And he gave this entrance very early. He was worried. We think, how can a spiritual person be worried? They must be always tranquil. But he was worried. He was worried that he may not have the strength and the length of life to complete the 10th canto. So he wanted to give this quickly, immediately, a summary study of the 10th canto. So this was what he was offering. And when the English professor asked about this, being treated like dolls, the gopi girls being treated like dolls, Srila Prabhupada said, "Yes, Krishna, he treated them just like dolls, just like playthings." And he stopped. And the man's a little bit like, how do you feel about that? But Prabhupada didn't have to say any more. He was totally satisfied with that. So this was the beginning. The Brahmins' wives came next. After the gopis, Krishna went, and it was early morning. He had played with them. When they came out, they received back their clothes. He told them, "Now you go home." They didn't want to go now. He had charmed their hearts. They didn't want to leave him. But he said, "You go." They stood looking at him with their eyes filling up with tears. And he said to them, "Don't worry." He said, I know the desire within your hearts. And I will satisfy you on the next coming Sharad Purnima. So this is winter. So I go through all the seasons. The next autumn, I will dance with you. I will make an arrangement and I will meet you." And they knew, because of their culture and shyness, that if he danced with us, that meant he was our husband. There was no question. No one else could be our husband if he was to dance with us. This is Krishna's Leela Shakti. All the girls who are married are married, but they appear to be married to other men. Even Srimati Radharani, for the purpose of Leela, is married to another person. But none of these personalities who marry them are actually a different, in a sense, to Krishna himself. In fact, I think Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur tells us that their marriages all took place during the year that Lord Brahma had stolen the cows and calves. So who did they marry? Initially they all married Krishna. But it is necessary for them to be married to exhibit the mood of Vrindavan. And what is the mood of Vrindavan? It is different than the mood that we are recommended to follow in the practice of sadhana bhakti. The mood of Vrindavan is, they don't care about anything. They don't care about their family. They don't care about regulative principles. They don't care about Vedic injunctions. They don't care about the worship of the Lord. They don't care about anything. All they care about is pleasing Krishna's senses. That's the only thing. When they get up in the morning and dress themselves so beautifully, they're just thinking, when Krishna sees me, he will be pleased. So this, to show this, they even forsake all of the Vedic obligations. They leave their husbands. They run in the dead of night. Their mothers and fathers come to stop them. Their mother-in-laws and father-in-laws say, you can't go. They don't care. They just go. Because they have only one Lord of their lives, and that's Krishna. And one purpose is to please him. So when he calls them, they go. So they show the highest shining example. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself, he said, there's no one who can love Krishna to the par excellence of the residents of Vrindavan, and especially the gopis. Because they forsake even Vedic dharma. In Dwarka, Krishna is loved by the queens, but they also have their sons, and they also have so many family members, they also love them. So their love, in the Srila Rupa Goswami's Ujjala Nilamani, there are three levels of female lovers of Krishna. And the first one is given in Mathura, because there are three places of Krishna's pastimes. Mathura, then Dwarka, then actually Dwarka, then Mathura, and then Vrindavan. And who is the lover of Krishna in Mathura? Kubja. So we think Kubja. Kubja was like a society girl. Mm-hmm. And she loved Krishna and wanted to please Krishna for her own pleasure. So she's mentioned, but just only barely, because she wanted to please Krishna for her own pleasure, Kubja. And then in Dwarka are the queens. The queens love Krishna also. They're his wedded wives. They serve and take care of him. But Krishna himself says, in the words of Srila Rupa Goswami, that their love can't really bind me. It doesn't really completely, like, capture me, because they love me, yes, but they have so many other things that they have as well. And it's all transcendental. It's not mundane like here where we have material attachments. It's all transcendental. They're all Krishna's transcendental devotees who they love. But they love them in a very Vedic way, dharmic way. So Krishna tells Satyabhama this, that do you think in an angry state that she has created to please Krishna, to allow him to remember the love of the residents of Vrindavan? He says, do you think that my mind stays here with you queens? Every moment I'm thinking of the residents of Vrindavan. I can only think of the residents of Vrindavan. And he goes on and on, and Narada stops him because he's about to go into a state of ecstasy in which he's going to lose himself. So he doesn't wish him to go that far, so he changes the mood. But the queens of Dwarka, when they want to please Krishna, they also express that they notice at night, when they're lying in bed with him, he's saying, oh Radhe, he's talking in his sleep. So imagine, the wife is saying it all night. But because they're not ordinary women, they're not self-centered souls, they're happy that Krishna is happy. And of course, he loves them thoroughly. But his most intense love is for these girls of Vrindavan, because they are ready to forsake anything and become like his dancing dolls. He can say, do this, now do this, and they'll do it. They'll simply do it. They don't know anyone else. They don't even, not aware of their bodies even. They're only aware of Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya glorifies them, and he tells us that they're the best. Now, after the gopis have been treated like dancing dolls, Krishna and a few of his young friends, young enough not to know what's going on, little boys, they were with him. He took his little friends and off they went, and they joined the rest of the cowherd boys, but Krishna hadn't had breakfast. because he's gone early in the morning to satisfy the gopis. So then they wandered and played to near to a place called Patrol, and in that place lived the brahmanas and the brahmins' wives. So Krishna there, he satisfied these brahmanis who had been constantly thinking about him because they had heard about him from the flower sellers who had come from Vrindavan. They live on the border, Mathura this side and Braj on this side. So when the ladies would come with the sabjis and things and the flower garlands and all the fruits and so on, they would talk to them, what is he doing? How is Kanaya? And they would hear all about Krishna. And they had developed in their hearts such love for him. But look at them, they're in the topmost category of Vedic culture, they're brahmanas' wives. So what can they do? They can't do anything. It would be highly improper for them to do anything except to keep Krishna always deeply in their hearts. So just to please them, he sent the boys back to them, and the ladies came with all their foodstuffs. They forgot about their husbands and the yagya and everything and bought everything for Krishna and the boys. And then he said, now you can go back. And at first they said, no, we won't go back. We'll stay here in the forest. We'll be like forest goddesses. We'll just stay wandering in the forest for the rest of eternity. You promised that you will give anyone who comes to you, you'll give them shelter. So we've come to you, can't send us back. But then he says, but it will not look very nice. I'm a cowherd boy, you're Brahmins' wives, very select ladies in society. You should go back. So they're feeling very unhappy, and then he promises them that you will always remember me, always think of me, and always hear about me, and you will always remember me, and in your next birth you can come and be with me. So they go home. And then in that village, just to satisfy their husbands, Krishna is arranging this Indra Yagya. Nanda Baba is arranging the Indra Yagya, and Krishna talks him out of it. And they have a wonderful celebration of Govardhan Leela. And now comes in Indra, having called the most powerful clouds, the clouds that are capable of covering the whole earth in flood. Such powerful clouds to come to such a small region and just completely inundate it. So Krishna has made a special attempt to facilitate Indra in his embarrassment by going to a very kind of a secluded place, so that Indra, because he's so proud, he's such an important man, you know, and he's going to have to come and sort of eat some dirt. So he, you know, this shouldn't be done in a way that will make him too uncomfortable. So Krishna goes off somewhere quietly. And Saravi, as his mother, as his the person to speak on his behalf, is bringing Indra. And Krishna will listen to him, as he did not listen to, he listened to Lord Brahma but did not respond. And he will respond to Indra. And as we were hearing, my husband was saying at the retreat, why is it that Indra's offense, it's like, again, if we think of the general manager, and there's one person puts a frog in his desk, you know, and he's very offended by that. It's not a very kind, you know, it's not the appropriate thing to do. He's played a trick on him to see how influential he is, and he calls all his power and makes this person feel terrible. That's one example, to play a trick on somebody. But what if he hires a gunman to try and kill him? Which one would you consider the more severe? The gunman, anyone would think, obviously, is more malicious. It's a nastier thing to do. And yet, in Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan, Lord Brahma's offense is considered more serious. So you can think on that. And does anyone remember the reason why Lord Brahma's offense is worse?
Because he separated his devotees from Krishna.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. What Indra did, Krishna could use it by his Leela Shakti to bring everyone together. What Brahma did was he took his friends away. And Krishna, for one whole year, he acted the part of every one of those cowherd boys, so that none of the residents of Vrindavan would feel the distress. But at the same time, in his heart, he missed the cowherd boys. So he was not pleased. Whereas when Indra did such a malicious thing, it brought everyone together and they had a wonderful festival that turns into a festival that even we celebrate here in Melbourne, Australia, every year. So this is the result of Indra's act, the result of Lord Brahma. We don't celebrate a festival for Lord Brahma taking the boys away. So these are the wonderful pastimes, and there are so many illuminations that can be given when one reads the various acharyas, Sridhar Swami, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Kavi Karnapur, Srila Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, and others. So by hearing about Krishna and his pastimes, gradually, the tendency to try to be happy in this world, independent, the amputated hand becomes painful, and we actually wish that we could be reunited with the body of Krishna. There is something that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said. He said, when you realize that you cannot find any happiness in this material world, you have made the greatest step in spiritual life. And when I think on that, I think on that very soberly, because most people have realized that in such and such a situation I can't be happy. And so therefore their mind, consciously or subconsciously, is wishing for another one. And when you realize that there isn't any that you can be happy in, then one starts to say, can you tell me more? I now want to hear about that. What's the method? Tell me the process. How can I get out of here? But the problem that keeps us here is because the mind is a repository of so many impressions, so many things are stored there, and they lead us to believe that with a few adjustments, major or minor, a change of body or a non-change of body, we can find something here. Ah! This heralds the end of class. Thank you. All right. Has anyone any questions? Any thoughts to add? Yes.
You said gopis are giving the best to Krishna.
Yes.
Krishna is also reciprocating very nicely. Like the picture on the farm.
Yes.
Krishna is painting Radharani's feet.
Yes.
So beautiful.
Yes.
Such transcendental exchange.
Yeah.
Krishna is
really
much better.
Yes. Krishna, he becomes servant of the gopis.
Yes.
Prabhupada was explaining this. He said on one tape I heard one time, he said, Krishna is so beautiful, so handsome, that even Madan is like the male, female attractive potency in a person. And everyone is enchanted by that. And even you don't have to be handsome to attract a woman. If she's ugly enough and you're ugly enough, she'll find you wonderful and she'll find you handsome, and it will still work out, because there's a potency there. It's not the object that's actually attracting, it's the potency. There's a subtle potency that draws a man to a woman and a woman to a man. So this madan is what makes everybody excited to continue here, because there's something, some taste and flavor. If I gave you for your breakfast today some straw, you would put it aside and ask for something else, because it doesn't have any taste and flavor. So actually, material life has a semblance of attraction, because it's based on the rasa, the flavor of material life, is the same flavor of the spiritual world perverted. It comes down and the object is different. Our object is madan. We're looking at madan. Ah, very nice. Whereas Krishna is madan mohan. He bewilders Cupid. Cupid has no power over him. That means he can sit in the dead of night with beautiful girls and he will be unmoved. If he chooses to be moved, he will be moved. If he chooses not to be moved, he won't be moved. This madan mohan, he bewilders even Cupid. And Cupid, millions of Cupids come down and offer their respects to Krishna and are attracted to him also. So he's madan mohan, he bewilders even this attractive potency, become subordinate to him. So Prabhupada says, so when he is attracted to the female potency, it cannot be any woman of this world, because he is beyond Madan Mohan. But he becomes Mohan Mohini. So he says on the tape, just imagine how powerful she is, because she controls even him. This is the transcendental principle. She controls Krishna. She is, if we want to say, well, who is she that she can control Krishna? She is his Ladini Shakti. She is his potency for enjoyment. Do you think God is so sterile that he has to sort of, he has nothing, he has to sort of scrounge around and try to make some woman like him, like everybody in this world? He has all enjoyment at his fingertips, so he's not God. God means he's on the top. What is it like to be on the top? It has to incorporate everything that we know and absolutely far more. So she is his attractor. She is his mistress. So he is very happy to bow down to her and paint the red lac on her feet. Just like we see in India, you see the ladies, I don't think I've seen it here, they paint their feet red. Anyone who's been to India has seen this. It is part of their dress. Before they're dressed, fully dressed, they'll paint their feet red. So, and for a wedding or something, they'll especially paint their feet red. And sometimes they'll put henna on their feet and beautiful designs. Krishna will do that for Srimati Radharani. True? So this is the extraordinary nature of Radha and Krishna's seva. That Krishna does seva of Radha. And of course Srimati Radharani is always doing seva of Krishna. A transcendental, loving couple. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much. Arigato.